Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the Treasure Island, and the preliminaries are over. We've got 10 players that are going to get on the stage and play for $800,000. And the leader who made a steady advance and then passed, the longtime leader, Robert Gilbert, Jim Meeks. And Jim, tremendous job.
No, thank you very much. It was a lot of fun getting here.
Well, and let's talk about that before we talk about anything else. You got to feel pretty fortunate to be here. You had weeks ago.
No question.
Tell everybody what happened.
Well, about a week ago, Sunday afternoon, after the Super Bowl, not because of it, but after the Super Bowl, I had to go to the hospital. I was having a heart attack. We had called in a doctor, and I told him, I said, I got to get to the NHC, guys. And so he said, well, we'll put one stent in tonight, and then tomorrow we'll do the other one.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'll get you out of here Tuesday. And I said, good, I got a plane to catch on Wednesday, and here we are.
And how are you feeling right now, health-wise?
Great. Today's medical technology is far advanced from what it used to be, and I feel fine.
One last question, or you go.
I was going to say, had you had any previous issues? Heart-wise? Have you ever had a...
One about 20 years ago.
Wow. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
So very, very fortunate on my part, and it was also fortunate that I got to come down here. So,
last thing, real quick. Do you think your experience as a Horse Player World Series winner is going to help you see this out up at the final table?
I will guarantee that. It gives you a different perspective when you've won one, that you know a few things that... You don't worry about it. Play the horses you like and see how it turns out.
All right, you got to get to work. Thank you so much. Godspeed up there.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Jim Meeks, and really a remarkable story. You want Paul? You got a minute for us? Or are you going to?
I think
on your way back.
That's good.
On your way back.
I think that would be the first person to ever win the Horse Player World Series.
Definitely.
And the NHC. So we've got Chris Littlemore going for a back-to-back NHC, and we've got
a lot of history.
A lot of potential cool stories out there.
Oh, absolutely. It's one after the other. I don't think we can have a bad one, honestly. I can't wait to learn more about some of the players that we don't already have the dossier on, but we did just get the final list too, so we can go over some of the folks who just missed it, including Stefan Gravina, who was up there for a very long time. And how about this, Basil DeVito, no bigger fan of the game than Basil, just missing 264.20. And then speaking of former Horse Player World Series winners, Christian Helmers just missing the cut and ending up in unlucky 13th for him. Frank Klitsch, who made a deep run, ends up 14th at 260. John Pinder, very nice guy, who is going to be joining us, Steve, at some stage. Horse Racing Young at 41, guy from San Antonio, rookie on the tour, and he ends up 15th with 259.60. So some terrific performances and some folks who just miss it. What do you think, Chris? What are those guys' emotions in that bracket of 11 through 20 right now?
Well, it's sort of the woulda, coulda, shoulda, I'm sure. They're a little disappointed. I'm just like, it wasn't quite as disappointing, but yesterday I missed the cut by a few dollars to make it to the final round. You know, but if you've been here a few times, you get used to it. Sometimes it's your year and sometimes it's not.
And we now have joining us Paul Weezer, who seems like you're trying to help Jim Meeks keep the media from eating up too much of this valuable time.
Trying to keep him focused, that's indeed. It's an exciting time.
How far back do you guys go?
We've been friends an awfully long time. My really close peer group had Tom Noon, who finished fourth last year.
Yep.
Jim, who can win this. Dennis DeCower and Don Beardsworth, both to finish second in the NHC. So it's a group with a lot of good experience.
That's excellent. How was your experience as a player at this year's event? You had so many successes in live bankroll play, but no stranger to some high-up finishes in Mythical Money as well.
Thanks. Yeah, I got as high as 10th yesterday in the contest. I was in the top 10% the whole way up until the last leaderboard update.
Oh, jeez.
Missed my last six plays and just I didn't earn it. What can I do?
Went cold at the wrong time.
And I did note, Paul, I said when I saw you bubble up to the surface, I said, you know, Paul has flirted with this kind of run several times, and one of the people that has got one's name on it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I had my chance. You know, didn't happen. We'll try again next year. I'm already qualified for next year.
You said that. That's right. That's right.
So that's a good thing.
That's pretty cool. Was that from the last chance, first chance?
No,
or?
I played at Santa Anita the first week in April.
Oh, there you go. Yep. That works out well. What other stories are you looking forward to following of the 10 players
on
our final table?
Randy Gallo is a legend. If Jim doesn't win him, he's the other guy I'm really rooting for. Besides being a legend in the game, he's about as nice a guy as you could ever want to meet. He'd be a great ambassador for the sport. Tremendous storyteller. Just a wonderful all-around guy. And if Chris Littlemore wins, they should induct him tonight into the Hall of Fame and skip all the preliminaries and move on. What an amazing story that would be.
He's looking good just for making two final tables in a row. I mean, that's an incredible achievement.
And Paul, you can appreciate this. I'm going to go back. While you were gone, I brought this topic up because I last night or this morning, I was looking to see how Tony Neville's odds looked. There's a lot of people who think, oh, well, it's random, and any schmo just gets hot. Let's see about that. Jim Meeks was 75-1.
And I will say I have a bet on Jim, so that would be good.
Oh,
look at you.
Nice.
Bob Gilbert, 75-1. Joe Perry was 50-1. Randy Gallo, 75-1. Then there were 300-1 shots. Littlemore, Graham, and Coles. And for people to know, you know, the typical number was 150 and 175.
Yeah, awesome.
So if you were below that, there was special consideration of your status as a player. Then the one field player, and that's Matt Vagevoli. We talked, Seth Merrow got ahead of that story.
Yep, Albany.
He's
guy.
From Albany and in finance. And then the longest shot was Frank Drew, who actually, from what I'm hearing, shouldn't have been that big of a price.
And those odds are, they're interesting. I don't know.
I
was 80-1, so what does that tell you? here you go.
It's obviously supposed to be more fun than anything.
And I do
else.
That each year. I come and bet a few dollars on each of my friends and hope for the best. And I want to cash my ticket on Jim today, so we'll see where it goes.
Let's see.
But they're calling them up now, so I'm going to head back. Thanks for having me. Good luck.
Thank you, buddy.
That would be tremendous, and we got thanks to the one and only Big Leo, Vukman gets us in front of the Jim Meeks heart attack. Seth Merrow, all our reporters keying in here. Seth gets the story of Matt Vagevoli.
There's no end to Leo's talents. I mean, he knows the IT world. He understands bookmaking. Fantastic horse player and handicapper, and now he's an assistant producer.
I should mention, by the way, before we get into this, and we're still about 25 minutes away from the first race, and I'll give you the list so you can follow along and do your own handicapping at home. A reminder, folks, it's what, 4:15 in the East, so you've got about a little less than 2 hours on the future wager. Don't forget that I didn't get a chance to talk yet at all today. I'll be in New Orleans starting Wednesday, Thursday, Friday for Risen Star. If you have not seen the card that was assembled by the Fairgrounds team, it is mind-blowing. 139 horses in 12 races, and it just spectacular, top to bottom. The Mine Shaft, the Rachel Alexandra, chasing yesterday is running. Baffert bringing three horses to Fairgrounds, including American Pharoah's little sister for Jane Lyon. And, boy, you're going to be in for a treat at the Fairgrounds. But note the Risen Star runners, 14-horse field, including the likes of War of Will, who drew the 14, and he is, of course, one of the players in the future wager. So don't forget, you got a chance. Limonite is also on that, and Limonite's 50-1, and I will don't let me forget to put a little Limonite bet in.
Yeah, there's. I think you can bet it right here, right?
Well, I'll bet through the the Churchill through the through the Derby future wager.
Gotcha. So there's still plenty of time on that, and that's great news. Already some fun stuff for racing fans to look forward to next weekend. But right now, everybody's thoughts are about what's going to be going down at this final table in just a few minutes' time. Really, we're about 20-odd minutes from this first final table race?
Exactly. They're going to go off at 1:40 Pacific, 4:40 Eastern, and let me run them down. Take a quick note, all right? Gulfstream, 10th. Then the Gulfstream, 11th. So the two Gulfstream races back-to-back at 4:40 and 5:13. The 10th is a 16-non-2 on the grass, a bread-and-butter race at Gulfstream. Then you've got a good first-level allowance race with 10 horses, 10 nice, it's a three-year-old group going 7 furlongs, and a few horses you're probably familiar with. The third leg goes to Oaklawn, and the eighth race at Oaklawn at 5:42. This is a money conditional allowance going a mile on the wet track. They'll stay at Oaklawn for mandatory number four. Make it 6:10 for the ninth race. This is a maiden special. These are three-year-old fillies, and start doing your mud numbers right now. Go to your Tommies, do your pedigree work ahead. Then Golden Gate for the seventh and eighth. A 25 claimer going six, and then a quality group, a big quality group at Golden Gate. These are first level allowance fillies, and they're going to go six. And we close things out at Santa Anita, where the rain clearly was just exactly what they expected for a couple of hours, and it didn't seem to bother the track because the turf is listed as good. So
that's
the down-the-hill race, a first-level allowance, and I've already got a price in here, by the way.
Nice.
Animosity, the four, I know I'm betting later. Animosity cutting back from the Lady Shamrock with Joel Rosario.
It's going to be great. That's the scenario we're looking for, is to get to that race with multiple players drawing live and to see some fireworks at the final table throughout, but especially as we get down to that last race at Santa Anita. It's going to be wild to watch the players at the final table and everybody rooting along in the ballroom. It's always such a great moment at the NHC, and will be so much greater if we can go there with a lot of chances. That's a huge difference, really, when you're looking at the way that the money escalates throughout the final table. And to have hundreds of thousands decided by a nose becomes a very real possibility.
Well, and it is notable that this seems like the most truncated top-to-bottom 10 that we've had so far under this format.
Yeah, I feel like we've had a cap horse between the top and the bottom before on the regular. And so to have that number be more like a 9-to-1 shot, it should lead to excitement. But just to be clear, I wasn't telling Chris yesterday. I should wait till he's here to say this, just because he's enjoying needling me and getting me worked up. But I wasn't saying that it was, some terrible format. I was just wondering if there was some way of trying to engineer a little bit more of this. But hey, this year we end up with it. Oh, there, we're getting the connection. We're now getting the connection to Team Matisse in terms of our man Frank Drew. And what's you, this
well,
is
first
not,
of all, introduce Tony.
Tony, what's your? I don't even know your last name. I'm embarrassed to say.
Anthony Tamburino. Tony the Pony. Or who's Anthony? The Matisse crew.
Of the Matisse crew. And tell us about Frank Drew.
Frank is my stepfather, and was married to our mom, who we lost in 2014. But he's been an avid gambler. And, when I was younger, we used to go to Vernon Downs, living in upstate New York.
Sure.
And Finger Lakes, and then would spend the summers in Saratoga. I was 11 years old, so he's been doing this a long time, and it's very exciting when they said F Drew.
F Drew, not too bad. Now,
how did he get there? How did he make this move?
Well, he was quietly grinding away, and he was between the 2 and the 7th at Gulfstream. What was it? Maybe the ninth race or so.
Right towards the end there.
Yes, and the seventh ran second, the two ran third. So he had one pick left. And he was between the three and the nine at Tampa, and he went with the three, and the three went from last to first. And and we thought initially that he was going to make it, but it came right down to like Pimple, $3.
Unbelievable. Now, when did he get into contest? Did he get into it through the Matisse crew?
He's been qualifying every year, but I've been a part of the Matisse group for years. So he's known the guys for probably 20 years.
That's wild. So, and contest, does he go back to the sort of Matisse origin story in contest has to do with an event we're talking about a lot, the Horse Player World Series. Did he start playing with them there through you, or do you know when he started in contest?
Yeah, pretty much. Every summer we sit in the backyard. We have the same tables for the last 15, 20 years. So he, you know, Paul Duke, Ogre, they... he's pretty much associated with them for the last 20 years.
You left out Battler.
Oh, and the Battler. Right. And Marvin. We've had some 10,000-calorie dinners every night. So, I'll tell you what. We're all exhausted. But
I asked you this the other night at dinner, but we'll do it again on the air. How did you? What was your connection to this this lot?
Well, I used to gallop racehorses, and I also trained for Paul. So I trained at Finger Lakes, and then we did the fair circuits. I was mainly, like I said to Ken Rudolph back in 2005, I'm the only guy going from Del Mar to Beulah Park. Nobody else would be able to say that. So. Yeah.
You're in the record books with the potential, with the potential for Great Barrington to reopen and be remodeled.
Oh my God, Paul said every minute Paul sees an article, you're going back to the fairs. You're going back to the fairs. Yeah, he loves it. We had such a good time there, and I was leading trainer at Northampton in 2002, 97, 98. Something like that. But the fair circuit was quite a... It's interesting, to say the least.
And what are you up to these days? Are you doing anything with horses, or are you more on the gambling side?
I got hurt bad on a horse in 2008. I galloped for 24 years. The last guy I worked for was Todd Pletcher. Great, great stand-up guy. I mean, fabulous. And ended up hurting my knee, and now I just hang around Saratoga year-round and have the opportunity to come here and root for the guys. This is my first time here, actually.
Right? Paul's year?
I usually go to the Orleans one, the World Series.
Gotcha. That's
the
Matisse family reunion, yes.
Exactly. Yes. Yep. So, excited to be here. Now the events that are happening here.
It's pretty amazing, and it's going to be fun. And if it's your first one, you'll see. They'll all be up there. There'll be a big photo opportunity. And unlike so many other years, the leaderboard is so compressed here. In the past, to be in 10th, you might still be several long shots away from getting to the top. In the case of Frank Drew, he's within a 9-1 shot. What can you tell us about his playing style? Is he more likely to...
He's a grinder.
Okay.
He generally doesn't take horses that are above 6-7-1.
Interesting.
And that's actually how he got here. And there's been a lot of bombs. Like, as you know, yesterday, the last hour, the witching hour, was really... there were a lot of bombs at Oaklawn Fairgrounds, and it was getting crazy. And Paul, as you know... Paul had two entries, and he was, hovering between 20th and 40th. And unfortunately, all the bombs.
They weren't his bombs.
No, but he's amazing. Paul is incredible. He and Duke, incredible handicappers. So I ride on the coattails. I don't handicap. That's what I do. And John the Clocker. John also, big, huge, huge gambler, great handicapper. So I'm in with a very, very good group of guys. So I can tell you that.
Do you think they're making plans to be here to root Frank on for the afternoon?
Well, they're all downstairs. There's no room up here.
Duke and Paul are coming to to sit with us and work on the and do some of the commentary as well as Nick Tamaro. We want to get Dave Weaver in here too. We're going to hear from Ellis Starr from Equibase in a moment. But we'll have the boys. Last year, of course, they ran the table with us, and it was one of the more remarkable discussions and an opportunity for people to listen in and understand the mentality and the way in which the synapses are working when these opportunities and as the board changes and the blocking and the maintaining position and basically all the machinations that go with the decisions, because it isn't just picking the horse I like the best at the best price. There's a little bit more going on.
Game theory, etc. What's a lesson that comes to mind that you've learned from hanging around with those guys about something about racing that you've picked up from hanging out with the Matisse crew?
If they like something, you better bet it. You can swear on Sirius too, right?
Yes.
If they like, from what I learned from Paul and Duke, I mean, if they like something, go and bet. I'm a $20 better. I'm not a $200 exact a box better and a thousand to win and all that stuff. So I'm more in the lower league. But I learned not to handicap, just to bet what they like.
There's something to be said for that. You handicap the handicappers if you're not going to handicap the horses.
Exactly. Yep. Yep.
Well, that's cool. That's great news, Steve, that they'll be joining us a little bit later. And, Tony, thank you for the dope on Frank. You got something else for us?
No, thank you for having me. Thank you. No, love the show. Love Steve. Had dinner with Steve two nights in a row. He missed the third 10,000-calorie night at the Palm. No, you guys
I was
are
in
great.
His chair.
Yes, you were, Steve. Yes, you were, Pete.
Yeah. And I heard you held your own for both of us.
Right. And let everybody know in Sirius Land that Pete makes the best ribs in Saratoga. So if you see Pete this summer, tell him you want to eat some of his ribs. Thank you very much, guys.
Cheers.
Unbelievable. Tony the Pony, Tony Tamarillo, with this absolute delight to get him. And, the Matisse team, obviously, it's a remarkable assemblage and the wake that's drawn in behind it the pilot fish really as it were it's an organism. It's almost like that Star Trek episode, the thing that was eating planets and kind of just trailing through space, and it just gets bigger and bigger.
It sounds about right. Great to have them back and have a member of their extended crew represented at this final table. And shall we bring in our next
Absolutely.
Guest?
Absolutely. Let's say hello to Ellis Starr. Ellis joined us at about this juncture last year, too. We'll get some thoughts from Uber Capper. And, by the way, we have this story, Ellis, developing with Jim Meeks having a heart attack last week. Unbelievable. I haven't asked you in too long. How is your health after a crazy scare?
Thank you. 2 years cancer-free.
Outstanding.
And,
awesome.
Everything's going good and just, enjoying life.
You got cancer like this and you got rid of it like this.
Yeah, well, 6 months wasn't like that, but it's close. Yeah. It's true. It comes and goes. It comes and it went, and it's going to stay went. And so,
that a boy.
But, yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, it's so much fun being here, even though I'm not eligible to play, as we talked about last year, with so many people I know. I've seen people I've seen in the I haven't seen since the Horse Player World Series I played in 15, and some people since 2012. Had dinner with the great old handicapping author Barry Meadow.
Oh, he's got a new book coming out.
New book.
We're going to have him on shortly.
Oh,
we're going to absolutely have Barry on.
Yep, he was out here for something, and he's in Southern Cal, and I said, can we get together? And he said, sure, and it was fantastic. I hadn't seen him since 2012. Grew up with him when I was in California, and Dick Mitchell was like my mentor.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's so cool. And Mitchell,
great.
Another fantastic handicapping author, as
absolutely.
Is Barry Meadow, neither of whom get the I don't think they get mentioned enough when it comes to the best handicapping authors for whatever reason.
Here is the book, and
proof, yeah.
the skeptical handicapper, and it should be just absolutely tremendous. The skeptical handicapper using data and brains to win at the racetrack. It's a real departure. It's very different, even for Barry,
right.
He feels like it's an updated approach to the game.
It sounds like the Kieran book from back in the day of like interrogating old racetrack axioms or whatever you want to call them through data. But I mean, anything he writes, I'm interested in checking out.
No, he's great. He gave us one preview. He said he gives a lot of charts. He said take it in bites. You know, but I'm so looking forward to it because it is so different than his stuff. He said he had something to say, and certainly he's saying it again, which is phenomenal. So, yeah, a lot of fun and being here with all the people and just the charge and these eight great or 10 great handicappers coming up.
And speaking of the group coming up, and let's get the plug in right away for Stats Racelens, which is a sponsor of the NHC this year. And Robert Gilbert has been a user from early on, from literally its introduction.
Correct. And it's just so, last year we had a number of people come up and want to know about it. And this year more people are coming saying, I've been using it, and they're using it in conjunction with other stuff. Some people are using it themselves.
Sure.
Joe Rosen, who
That's
was
right.
in.
What a nice run he made.
I said to our colleagues, I was surprised because myself and one other of my colleagues takes a lot of these calls. And I said, Joe's never called. He must have figured it out on his own. And that's phenomenal because he did a little video for ABR about it.
Oh, cool.
And it's just great. It so many different ways that people can use it, only certain parts of it, to get what they want out of their handicapping.
Is Robert Gilbert your root at the final table because of the connection to Stats Racelens, or do you know any of these other folks too?
I am not going to take a favorite. I am just going to enjoy the show and really hope that everything comes out like
cool.
we're supposed to be. Yes, true.
Let's take a look and discuss the first leg. And this is the Gulfstream 10th, and we're about a little less than 10 minutes away, 7 minutes on the board. 15 minutes in practicality. Ellis, what did you come up with here?
Well, I'd like, if we can time, I'd like to do the first and the last, believe it or not.
All right.
So the first was, I want to say simple, and I used Racelens a little bit, but then last I have something to talk about. I started looking just for common denominators considering the condition of the race, claiming non-winners of two, and no extras, no ups, just simple stuff. And I went down the page looking to see, and I note National Honor, and I saw the morning line was 6, and now it's 11. And I kept looking to see, okay, well, if I like a horse like this, if I'm playing in contest or for real money, who's more likely? And I kept looking and comparing 1 to 2, 1 to 3, 1 to 4, 1 to 5, how you do sometimes. And I said there really wasn't. I ended up on National Honor for handicapping, the 4 Hoover Tower, and the 6 Get the Facts, and I guess I see him not even on the favorite, the 7 Jupiter Rising. But very simple. This was more simple handicapping. Second off the layoff, second off the claim. The race at Tampa on January 2nd was a nice finish from 9th to 2nd. Three post gets the rail here. Draw a line. I always draw, and Test Racing allows you to strike out lines. So I struck out, or if I do paper, I drew a line through the dirt race. Go back and look at the turf race before that. It was a nice third-place finish, got beat a neck and a half. So the last two turf races at the non-winners of two condition, and these are, we call them one-first,
Mm-hmm.
The overs are one-first.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all one for something. So he's one for 12, but on turf, he's one for 6. And it's not that bad. So that's why I landed, and now I'm looking at 12, which is, pretty good odds. The 4 Hoover Tower, almost the same kind of thing, moving around trainers. Bob Hess had them. It went Bob Hess Senior, Bob Hess Junior, Southern California, shipping out to Florida, and he gets close, but there's nothing to say. 1 for 10 he doesn't really have it. Maybe the jockey change to Leperu would make a difference. 9 to 2 is certainly a play for all your gimmicks and exotics, and then the 6 was Get the Facts, and just a decent race off the trainer change, closed 11th to 4th. And again, it was a layoff from September to January, so you think they'll physically improve. And that's where I ended up on this one.
Nice. How about the down the hill race?
Yeah, I'm trying to pull up I remember most of my reasoning for this race, and I'm trying to pull it up on the computer, but it's not cooperating. But this was interesting. So every once in a while, I suspend my regular handicapping, and I don't just use statistics blindly. But I want to know something. And so I think anybody that plays Sandy regularly knows that down the hill is a special event.
Absolutely. There's a lot going on. Definitely those races are a little bit of their own animal.
Yeah,
sure.
Whether it's the jockeys or trainers, it's always something very special. And because it's special, I wanted to see like how jockeys do down the hill. And some of it was kind of obvious, some wasn't. So a couple of things that were very interesting to me, and then I'll get to what I like. So Joel Rosario, of course, switched his tack, and I'm still an expat Southern Californian. And Joel Rosario switched his tack, and he was always fighting for the jockey title with Bayerano when he was out there for the few years before he went east. But I looked and I said, wow, he's 3-for-29 down the hill since he came back. Maybe he forgot how to ride it. I don't know. He's certainly not getting bad stock, right? And then, of course, we know Flavian Pratt, but I didn't realize not only how good he is. When we do some of our webinars, we talk about not only the win percent, but ROI. You think, like, for example, I'll side trip here. You know, Todd Pletcher switching to Castellano, right? You think it's a great play, but it probably loses money. Well, it's a great play, and it doesn't lose money. It's an 8% flat bet profit, 300 races over 5 years.
That's a significant sample.
Believe it or not.
Yeah.
So Pratt, believe it or not, was 26% wins and a plus 18% ROI for the last 12 months in downhill turf sprints at Santa Anita. So I looked at the horse as a special purpose. I see, came to the U.S. They apparently think very highly of the horse. Third beaten a neck in a Group 3 in England, and then maybe probably bled because the horse finished was his 10th. Comes to the U.S., goes on Lasix to put him in the Black Pearl Stakes, which is for three-year-olds only. Gets beat a half a length. Okay, that's great. That was May. Something goes wrong. Horse isn't back till January. Another downhill sprint, finishes 6th, beaten 2, Rosario. Well, Pratt's on. So I'm just going to make a case that last race is relevant to me completely, and that I'm going to look back to the Black Pearl, which is a fine effort, and I think he can run. So he's my top pick in that race based on, basically, I was looking at jockey first. The other one, and certainly for the contest players, and I think we're still... There's no rain, no measurable precipitation. Am I correct?
Fingers crossed, but we're on for now.
Yeah, because the downhills. I mean, I looked at said hundredths earlier, but so I looked at every horse. There's a lot that can win. The other horse that interested me a lot, and I'm personally going to be playing, and I would if I was at the table, is the 11 Nice Ice, and he's opening at fillies opening at 15-1, and it's almost similar in that in her fourth career start, which was her first downhill, second on turf, she won nicely at 4-1. That was in April of last year. Then she ran in that same exact race, the Black Pearl, and she ran 5th beaten 2. Now, she got beat by special purpose, but not a bad effort at 24-1. Comes back and stretches out a mile at Del Mar last summer and wins. So she's proven herself. And then she runs 2nd in open allowance. The win was Calbred. A couple bad races, 8th and 6th. She's off November to January. But the January race was a dirt sprint. It can't be anything more than a prep. You know, I mean, I'm sure trainers sometimes, say to themselves that, you know, I got to give the horse a prep and a race. So that's my other pick, Nice Ice, to go along with Special Purpose. And
give the numbers. What are the numbers?
Special Purpose, number 11, Nice Ice, in the 9th at Santa Anita. I haven't decided on gimmicks yet, but they're both very good win contenders.
Ellis Star, everybody, and with just a couple of minutes here ahead of the first of the mandatories, Gulfstream 10, a quick rundown, and National Honor, the one horse for Falcone, 6-1. Good Old Boy, 13-1 right now. Mike Maker, Joe's Bold Cat, certainly have bet on him over the years, 5-1. You've got a 3-1 co-favorite, more or less, Hoover Tower, Bob Hess, and not a, a horse for Luch. The 5 is Electro, who's a little interesting from Mike Trombetta, the 3-1 co-favorite. Here is the 7, Jupiter Rising. There's your Get the Facts as well. We should mention, Ellis, that's Danny Gargan off the, not the claim, but the second start and dropping 50% in value. The co-favorite, we mentioned, Jupiter Rising, and feels like a bit of a giveaway, but nobody bit last time. The Barry Schwartz homebred. Jupiter Rising 3-1, Great Ars Resolve, a big price in here. You're looking at 30-1 on the Eddie Broome. Brag Dude, the 9, 30-1 plus as well, 35 now actually, for Juan Rodriguez. Stormy Justin, Patty Reynolds, the 10, 17-1, 30-1 on Sky Knight as we get to the outside. And Looking Forever, the 12, 45-1 as well. For Juan Rizzo, and there's your field of 12. What we'll do, Pete? Right, we get the we'll get the, right as the gates open. We'll be able to see who everybody took. But what's your thoughts here as we get closer to a start?
I can't wait to see how many different horses are covered. It looks like just the perfect race to get us started here at the final table. And I'm gonna what I might do also just to you can. See the board while the race is going. I might just throw up a periscope, send people to the Listen Live link, and then you can see as it's happening who has what. I think that might be a fun way to that might be a fun way to work this out.
Joined by Fox Sports Jonathan Kinchin. It's fun to say that, huh?
Yeah,
it's, Fox it's Sports got a, it's, Jonathan Kinchin.
It's got a nice ring to it.
What do you think here?
Obviously rooting like heck for Marshall.
Of course.
So, I think we're all in agreement of the horse that he kind of played. So I think we, you know, just sitting around the table, having the chat, one of the fun parts of the final table, when you go back to your table to do your job and do your work, the group of guys you've been hanging out with all week kind of become a team, and, you know, you can bounce ideas off of them. I remember doing the same thing the year that I was fortunate enough to make it. So, yeah, no, I'm just rooting for Marshall, and you know this is going to be a fun. These are fun races when you get all the picks on the board. You can hear the guys cheering and carrying on. It's a lot of fun.
What do you remember, JK, about this experience of this time, these moments before the first final table race? What was going through your head a few years ago when you were there?
You know, it didn't really hit me in the moment, like when it was happening. You know, I just. Was just trying to pick horses and trying to pick winners, and you know, John O'Neill was so far ahead. I didn't see myself really catching him. I was just trying to advance and pick up some extra dollars on the check. So
makes sense. Very different this time. Only a 9-1 shot really separating 10th from first. Maybe we'll see the fireworks that we've been expecting. At this year's NHC final table.
Absolutely. I hope there is a leaderboard change and some movement. You know, obviously get Marshall kind of going back. I think he's like 25 bucks back, I think, from being in the money. So, or being first, so that, you know, having the lead. So I think that'll, I think there'll be some changes for sure.
All right, I did throw up a periscope. So if you're listening to the live feed, the fastest way that you're going to be able to see who played what, I'll just hold this right up to the screen when we have those picks, rather than just we can run them down also. I'll take that responsibility, but you'll get the information faster. Sitting here with Steve Bick, with Jonathan Kinchin, as the horses are moving on to the turf course. How did Marshall seem to you? What describe his mental state?
He seems good. He seems good. No, he didn't seem thrown off. He was a little nervous. He wasn't going to make the cut.
That's what I saw him. I saw him getting a bite to eat, and he that was his big concern, was that somebody might have leapfrogged when we had the big price at Fairgrounds.
Right, and he didn't want to look at the races. And I told him, I said, man, if I was you, just start looking. Like, you're going to make
waste
it.
The time.
Just start looking, because they're gonna make you come up there and fill out paperwork, and you spend a lot of wasted time up on the stage. Like, you know, take advantage
use
all the time.
Time
that you have.
Use the time. That makes sense. I guess he was worried about the jinx. All right, we are loading into
the
gate.
Marshall played the 5, Electro.
Okay, there you go.
And that's the horse. That's the horse we cited. How about that? I love hearing that.
Yeah, let's see.
The hard part is I'm alive in the pick 6 at Aqueduct. I don't know which race I'm going to watch.
10-1 on Electro. 2-1. The 2-1 favorite right now continues to be the Todd Pletcher drop down.
All right, it looks like, gosh, it looks like they're going to put it up over there. Let's see if the camera can catch that. Yeah, I can do it. Frank Sorensen making a cameo on the Periscope there. But anyway, this will be good. We should be able to see it. Hopefully Frank's not going to stand there the whole time, but anyway, we'll figure it out.
No, and I do pretty good jotting them down when we get to this juncture. Just about ready for a start. We'll be underway for the final table, NHC 19. Well, luckily,
what's going on?
The signal's dropped three or four times, and if you've been listening, Casey's had audio. You could see the ILO calls have been interrupted a few times. I don't know if it's weather or sunspots.
And they're off. From the center, Jupiter Rising gets the first call and is headed off for the early lead. Moving up is Good Old Boy, and up on the outside, here's Brag Dude, offensive-minded. In between horses, Get the Facts is looking for forward position as well. Get the Facts will land third behind Brag Dude, who's up front. It's Brag Dude, a length and a half in front. Get the Facts is very keen while racing in second. Back to third, Jupiter Rising. Then comes Good Old Boy to the inside of Stormy Justin. They work 2.5 better than Joe's Bold Cat with National Honor down at the inside. He's dropped better than 7 or 8 lengths off the lead. Then back to Great R's Resolve ahead of Lookin' Forever. The SoCal Invader Hoover Tower is third last. Second last while on hold is Electro, and the trailer is Sky Knight. Down the backstretch they go, and up front, Brag Dude leads the way 3/4 of a length. Get the Facts is there second. These two have opened 5 or 6 at least on Jupiter Rising, who's racing in third. On the outside, and Stormy Justin is now racing in fourth. At the inside, and Good Old Boy from fifth. Up on the outside goes Joe's Bold Cat, then National Honor, who's down toward the rail, as these top two continue to go very quick as they round the far turn. Get the Facts committed for home now. He really hasn't been asked for his best, but he's striding to a clear lead. Brag Dude is second. They're well clear of Jupiter Rising, a driven third, looking for stretch dangers, and they start to close ranks on this leader a touch with 1/4 mile left to go. Off the turn, it's Get the Facts on top by 4 lengths. Now here's a run from National Honor down at the inside, and he's taking up the slack with Jupiter Rising on the outside. 1/8 mile to go. National Honor hitting high gear as Get the Facts is hitting the wall in deep stretch. National Honor powers to the front, and National Honor will win it. Get the Facts holds second. Up third was Good Old Boy, then Sky Knight.
Immediate dividends for Joe Perry, for Randy Gallo, and Matt Vogvoglio. They all have taken the winner, National Honor, and 7-1. A big start.
That's going to shake everything up. We'll have a new leader, and we're going to have a whole lot of motion. They'll take a minute here for the race to go official, and they'll pop that information up on the screen. But we've started off with a bang. That was always the hope. And it's this final table living up to its promise so far, with the tight spread leading to some leaderboard movement right away. That's pretty much more leaderboard movement than we've had in the final tables combined up to this point. And Nick Tamaro joins us. Nick, how are you?
I'm great, Pete. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing very well. What did you make of that winner? What did you make of the fact that it was covered by, I think, 3 of our final table contestants?
Yeah, the most surprising thing about that race is that on paper it looked like it was pretty much devoid of early speed, and Get the Facts got a very aggressive ride to stay within range of Brag Dude, which I don't think many could really foresee. I didn't particularly love National Honor, but second off the layoff, had gotten a big pace setup last time, got a big pace setup this time, so got the job done. We did see some early movement on the leaderboard. I guess Joe Perry will probably be around $315 to $317 or so, and that's going to get him from, I don't know exactly what position he started the day at, but I don't think he was in the top 10.
I can tell you where Perry was, because I've got yesterday's numbers.
I believe he just made the cut by a couple of dollars.
Wow. So it's been a huge day. And also Matthew Vogvoglio, who
Albany.
Who made that big move with the Fairgrounds winner,
yes,
is now continuing that going. So yeah, we'll see. I don't know how much. I mean, the 11th race at Gulfstream is very competitive as well. So I think we could see another result that shakes things up. We've got a couple of Golden Gate races. Oaklawn's always good for some chaos. So yeah, I think it's going to be interesting now to see how people adjust. And I think what you'll see from the guys now in 8th, 9th, 8th, and 10th that are now finding themselves almost a cap horse away, they're going to just start bombing. And I think that's what we've seen over the years, as I just filibuster you here, is that we've seen the guys in the lower end of the top 10 will just start taking big prices right away.
Joe Perry started in 60th this morning, 187.40.
So, yeah, he just made it by a couple of dollars, has made this huge run all the way to the top. What would your inclination be, Nick? I think some players would look at the laddered pricing at the final table and maybe think about trying to move up to get into more money. But for you, is it the fact that all the money really is at the top that that you feel like the more efficient strategy is to bomb if you're in 8, 9, and 10, almost a capper away?
Yeah, you probably have to. You want to give yourself at least a chance to win. You know, the disparity between first prize and second prize is just colossal. So I don't think you want to find yourself with no chance to try and win, and you don't really want to be forcing yourself to take big prices. I mean, the other thing to consider here is that at least three or four of these guys probably did no handicapping for these races at all earlier. And to me, I know if I was Gilbert or any of the ones that were in the top three or four, I would have thought I was jinxing myself if I looked at the final table races. So I would have found a way to avoid it altogether. This is like me telling myself I can't look at the second day of a live money contest, but I do that. I mean, so I think you'll see them start to kind of fire away. For the guys that are mid range now, you know, obviously like Marshall Graham, who I'm unabashedly rooting for, he's still $38 or so out of it. So he needs to take what he likes.
Yes.
He needs to take 5, 6, 7 to one shots if that's what he likes.
17.20 to win, 8.40 to place. So 25.60 is the mutual to add in. The place, and by the way, Get the Facts was Ellis's pick.
Yep.
Ellis tabbed Get the Facts on the pace picture, as it happens. And so nobody took Get the Facts. So it is strictly the three numbers, Perry, Gallo, and Vagvoglio.
Have you had any dealings, Nick, with Randy Gallo in your time during the game?
I have not. I've definitely heard the name. Not dealt with him, but I know that certainly made up for, I think, what was a slow semifinal round for him hitting that 7-1 shot. So he's well on his way back.
Absolutely. He is a old school professional horse player, good friends with Maury Wolf. And it's interesting because in the very first NHC, Maury Wolf had a similar trajectory to what his friend Randy Gallo has done. Nothing on day one, crazy run on day two. I have to wonder if two old cagey pros have had any conversations. I think this is something Maury doesn't really participate in the contest world anymore, but I would imagine this is the kind of thing that gets him interested in following along with his friend.
Yeah, I would say so. It goes to show you that just because a slow first day may set you back a bit, you're not out of the mix here. And that's a conversation to have when you're talking about this format, obviously, as the contest world has sort of evolved and gotten away from $2 win place contests. There are still opportunities here for you to get back in the mix after a bad first day, and perhaps maybe the thing that you do is just change your approach altogether. And I'm sure those guys started looking at horses maybe that were a bit bigger prices than they originally planned. But it's the only time I've done well in this contest. This is my sixth time I've done well once. I've been close to the cut line three times. I was able to hit 118-1 shot, and then I was able to take anybody from 6-1 to 10-1, which is exactly my comfort zone. So that is what hitting one slight price affords you the opportunity to do.
Let me give you the rundown here. Perry now with 317. He moves into the lead. Meeks, 301. Gilbert, take that back. Gallo, second.
Yeah.
Gallo second. Perry first, 317. Gallo 311.20. Then Jim Meeks, 301. Then you come to Vagvoglio fourth, 299.20. So here's the volatility, Pete, that we were kind of speculating on that we might get. That's as much movement as we've seen in the top 10 in the final table, really, since we've been doing it. And then everybody pretty much stays in order from 4th down to 10th. Gilbert 4th, Simonovic 5th, Littlemore 6th now, Graham 7th, Cole eighth, and Drew ninth. I guess I was one off on the count, but
that's the idea.
There you go.
Still tense.
Drew is still 10th. Yes, that's right.
There It'll be go. Updating
Marshall
soon.
Marshall goes to 8th. Coles goes to 9th.
There you go. Thank you.
Yeah, 8th, but 8th not too far back.
No, not at all. Not at all. Still a couple mid-prices away.
Nick, how important is this tournament to you? You play in a lot of contests around the country. What's your how do you describe your current relationship with the NHC?
I enjoy the social element tremendously. It really is the unofficial horse players convention, with due respect to Questracon or anything else that goes on in the game. This is simply us horse players, and I think we enjoy obviously getting to see the people that we see throughout the year. The tour itself and the series of places that we go to in the contest world has developed quite a bit, and so we, you know, get to see a lot of these faces on a regular basis. But this is where we all sort of converge, and there's always a I noticed it the first time I played the NHC. I was 25 years old. I was by myself. I didn't really know
That's
many
wild.
People at all. I came out and went to Red Rock and sort of did my thing for a couple of days. And what I appreciated about it was that when you're around the other people who play in this, there is a good amount of camaraderie. There's a fraternity of people. And, you know, not that any of us need our ego stroked at all, but we all sort of know we accomplished something by getting here. So it's always going to have that component to it. I'm not necessarily and I shouldn't say I'm not a big fan of it. $2 win place is not my preferred format. However, I understand why for this event. It is the easiest method. And I do think it, I will say that as much preparation and work as goes into this, you don't leave quite as exhausted as you do at the end of a live money contest where you're formulating plays and thinking about strategy all day long. So it's great. I mean, it's, do I play in contests so I can qualify for the NHC? No. Qualifying for the NHC, I play in contests to make money. I qualifying for the NHC is obviously a perk, and if you've had a good year, you'll find your way here.
That's a very good description. I see John Pinder. Let's see if I can get his attention. He's fiddling on his phone over there. Had a big run. Fellow Texas player I wanted to introduce you to if I can get his attention at some point. A San Antonio guy there fiddling on his phone in the hat. Made a big run. Unlucky not to get a chance to participate at the final table. We'll have you guys share a microphone. But first, I just want to introduce John Pinder to Nick Tamaro. Fellow Texas handicapper, you've probably heard him on the podcast, and Steve Bick, of course. I don't know John. If you've gotten a chance to
have
to
you
meet
heard
Steve
of Steve
before,
Bick?
I'm sure you've heard of him, but I don't know if you got a chance to meet him. But a great run at the tournament, John. You were right there. You were in the top 10 for most of the day. You look like you're still kind of processing everything that went on. Do you have a bad beat story for us, or
I do. Let me tell you about it. No,
let's hear it.
I had a great time. It was the last race yesterday at Santa Anita, the 5-horse. I didn't know the jockey, and I was wavering between the two. And
oh no!
You know, I went with someone else. but all in all, I mean, had a blast.
Shane Foley, that came in to ride to reunite with that horse with the winner.
And he, I mean, it was a great ride too. But I was on the 12.
and what happened today? Take us through your semifinal round.
Oh, today was tough. It was really a grind. I think I got down to 13th, I got back up to 9th, and then eventually just ran out of bullets and ended up 15th.
Yeah, but when did you see the writing on the wall? Because you were hanging in there tenth for a while.
I knew my last bullet was a closer at Tampa for 7-1, and that would have put me back up. But, hey, you got to use it. So.
And where did you end up?
15th.
15th, I mean, not bad, a $21,000 hit and a terrific performance. You're a rookie. How did you get involved playing contests?
This probably has a lot to do with you.
Really?
And Mr. JK, listening to you guys, and of course, Mr. Bick, the godfather of horse racing over here. So all this is just a blast. I mean, I love the game and got introduced to the contest world, and here I am. A year later.
You tell us a little bit about how you got involved in racing in the first place. Texas resident. Were you going to the track as a kid?
I did, but it was due to my dad. He was from the West Indies, and when we'd go over to visit. Horse racing was huge over there.
Sure.
And as a kid, you know, I'm like, Dad, let me, can I make a bet? Can I? So it started early, and it's still here now.
That's great.
How old are you?
43.
Horse racing young.
I'll take it.
Oh, is your dad still around?
No, he's not. He passed away a couple years ago. But I've got a dollar that every time I place a bet, that's my placeholder. And so he's here with me.
Oh,
and,
that's great.
That's awesome.
He was rooting me on.
That's awesome.
That's great, John. Jeez, love it.
Who did you end up sitting with, and did you have any friends coming in?
No. I came in, me, myself, and I. But I met some great guys. I mean, horse racing's a great fraternity. And didn't know anyone, but I've got three or four friends now.
That's
from,
awesome.
Table 12, and I'll be here again next year.
That's awesome. Already on the list to come back. Have you had a chance to meet JK yet?
I have not.
Let's get him over here. I'll work on that, Steve.
And I'll ask you about what you use, what your handicapping methods, what tools have you incorporated in?
Stats and Brisnet are the two tools that I use. And after that, it's just me. I'm an analyst. Is my profession.
Okay.
And so it's...
Financial analyst?
Business analyst.
Okay.
So I'm looking at data and making decisions and processing things for my company. So this is kind of...
An extension.
Slides right into it.
And we've talked about this so extensively. We even did this at the symposium. I brought it up. The appeal of this game and this as a wagering exercise to the problem-solving mentality, and we don't lift a finger to reach to that type. Why are we not advertising or reaching out for math clubs and you know, to engineering, high school engineering and college engineering kids? I mean, it's bizarre that we have not ever figured out a way to have an outreach to the exact kind of people, whether they've been exposed to the game or not, that are going to absolutely love it.
Oh, it's
bizarre to me.
Yeah, and it's just a great game. I mean, there's so many different facets to. I mean, it's like fantasy football and betting, Monopoly, all rolled into one. And it's great. Especially here today, like with all the competition and the guys who are. Do it day in and day out and professionally to compete with these guys was a real treat.
In your handicapping and playing evolution and development, and also you can put it on parallel tracks and include contest play, what has been a roadblock, or what did you struggle with, what part of it has proven to be a challenge that you needed to overcome?
I think taking it all in. There's a lot of data. There's a lot of moving pieces to contests, strategy, all of that. So I could look at the form and come up with a potential winner. But now we've got odds involved. You've got strategy, and I really like, a long shot in the later part of the sequence that, now I could wiggle around up front. So it and that just makes it, for me, all the much more enjoyable.
Very, very cool. Where do you figure your path in contest will go next? What do you have any others circled on the calendar?
I'm turning around looking at that table. I want to be up there next year. No, I don't know. Super busy with the kids, and fortunate enough that my wife allowed me to come out for 4 days and live out one of my dreams.
That's awesome.
So I'll take a mini vacation from handicapping for about 3 days.
As a Texas resident, you have your hands tied a little bit.
I do.
How do you follow along? Or I guess that's another
it's
reason
a great question.
Contests are good.
Oh, it's yeah, and that kind of re-energized it for me, because we've got a track there in San Antonio, and my buddies are at the track right now. I just they told me I play, so I had to buy everyone a round.
That's fair.
But so when I'm there, I get to hone in my skills and paramutually, but. But the contest world is, just opened up a whole new world for me, to where it's like, I can hear about these people on, Mr. Big's program and your podcast, but to actually be a part of it